You're listening to Feminist Frequencies. Previously, we've talked about two women who were instrumental in the beginnings of radio, particularly with their experience in Morse code, ham radio, and other technologies of their time. This week, we're taking a different approach to radio and reporting. Mary Margaret McBride wouldn't have had the same background with technology, instead coming into the industry by way of more traditional journalism. Usually, at this part of an episode, I would talk about one important person to our broadcaster's life. However, I feel like I have to talk about two for this particular woman. The first would be Stella Karn. Stella Karn was Mary Margaret McBride's manager and was the person to get her the WOR gig at that first station where she would play her first character and ultimately take off in her radio career from there. Stella would continue to manage her throughout the rest of her career, and they were incredibly close friends through it all. The other person that I have to mention is Ben Gross. Ben Gross initially criticized Mary Margaret McBride's voice, being that she's from Missouri and had a very distinctive tone, but eventually grew to love her broadcasting style, and ultimately went on to praise her work in his own memoir as well. While initially he'd been very turned off by her voice, he kept tuning in. He actually ended up falling in love with her voice over her broadcasting career and would tell others to tune into her broadcasts as well. He would go on to speak very highly of her, despite his initial concerns about her voice and her personality. Another thing that he admits in his memoir is that people have a tendency to judge other people based on their voices, which is something that he had done with her. It's also something that I've talked about, particularly in the trailer for the show, when I talk about how women's voices have kept them out of the studio, yet it did not have this kind of an impact with Mary Margaret. Mary Margaret McBride was born in Paris, Missouri in 1899. She would go on to attend college at the University of Missouri in their School of Journalism, graduating in 1919. Being from Missouri, Mary Margaret McBride would have a very distinctive voice in the broadcast industry. Mary Margaret would not go on to get married or have any children, although she did have godchildren, nieces, and nephews. Her closest personal relationship would probably have been to Stella Karn, her manager. That being said, she was not at a loss for friends or family, whether they were biologically related or not. One chapter in her autobiography even talks about her radio family, especially early on. She had a lot of relationships with the people that she worked with and with the people that she interviewed throughout her 20-plus year career. Our past two episodes have talked about women who have been into more of the engineering and Morse code side of radio. However, that's not where Mary Margaret McBride started. She didn't start in broadcasting at all. Actually, she started as a journalist, like the traditional writing kind. She wrote articles for magazines and was actually in between jobs when she ended up at WOR. The reason that she was in between jobs was actually because of the Great Depression. That's why she had lost her job for the publication that she'd been writing for and would have had her name out there for jobs after that, but it wasn't until Stella Karn in 1934 said, "Hey, I've got this offer for you at this station in New York," that she would actually get into broadcast. It's important to mention that Mary Margaret McBride had actually been writing since she was 16. She'd started with her hometown paper, but then had eventually worked her way up and was writing into her 20s. However, after that is when she would move on to WOR. According to the LA Times, her job at WOR would pay $25 a week, and she was playing a character. She wasn't doing a talk show or like a children's program. She was playing a grandmother. This grandmother's name was Martha Dean, and would end up becoming sort of a beloved character, actually, because it wasn't necessarily the traditional women's program. They didn't do so much about cooking. She was genuinely playing this character where she would talk about her family, family being in quotes, since the family was actually made up. However, her audience responded very well to this character. They would actually write her letters, and she did make that connection to her audience as a part of that. However, this didn't come without its own set of struggles. When she was hired onto WOR, she was hired for a not particularly popular time slot. It was a period of time during the day where their listenership would have been very low because it would have been when people were busy or doing something else and wouldn't have been listening to the radio. However, she did have somewhat of an audience that would listen to her. This assignment of her time slot would probably have been a bit of a result of the sexism still surrounding women in radio. As this was the 1930s, it wasn't the most popular of an idea to have women on the air, and especially doing a program like Mary Margaret was doing. That being said, the audience members that did respond well to her were very loyal listeners through the years that she broadcasted as Martha Dean. Still, Martha Dean, or Mary Margaret's era with Martha Dean, had to come to an end. It was a bit of a memorable end, as well as because her character had such a large family, she couldn't keep track of everyone and actually broke down on air and admitted that she was fake, that she was playing a character, and that she was just someone named Mary Margaret McBride. This could have been catastrophic. I'm sure the station management that were listening were probably panicking with her admission that she wasn't someone named Martha Dean. However, there wasn't really much that they could do about it, and some station management probably weren't keeping as close of tabs on her as they probably should have been because she was a woman. However, some of her audience members did actually appreciate her honesty and respected it. And still, this wouldn't be the end of Mary Margaret McBride's career, especially with Stella Karn as her manager. That being said, WOR owned the rights to the name of Martha Dean. They could have given the role to another woman. However, there was a complication in doing this. Mary Margaret McBride's voice had become synonymous with the character of Martha Dean, and because Mary Margaret McBride had such a distinct voice, they couldn't easily replace her. Her voice was so unmistakable as Martha Dean that people would hear her talk and even say, "Oh, you sound like Martha Dean." This was something that she noticed and wrote about in her autobiography, Out of the Air. But regardless of that, WOR still had those rights. So, in transitioning into the next steps of her career, she was allowed to keep her name and wasn't playing a character anymore. We've been talking about Mary Margaret McBride here on Feminist Frequencies, with her start in print journalism, the people who pushed her towards broadcast, and finally, how she got her start in the broadcast industry in 1934. More on Mary Margaret McBride in just a second. After Mary Margaret McBride gave up the role of Martha Dean, her journalism skills really kicked in with her next, possibly more standout role in radio. After working with WOR, she went on to work with CBS and later NBC. She was given a 15-minute slot during the daytime, again, not the most desirable time to be on the air, but she made it work with her loyal audiences. She would go on to amass a huge audience, even being called a household name in some circumstances. The reason that she was able to do this is because of the journalism skills that stemmed from her print journalism days. This is because what she would do on the air was she would interview people. It's said that she interviewed more than 30,000 people on the air in her 20 years of broadcasting. Some of those names were big names. They were politicians, artists, musicians, One NPR story that remembers her even says that if you had 15 minutes of fame, you would be on Mary Margaret McBride's show. Part of the reason that she was able to do this for as long as she did, and the reason that she was so good at it, was because of the skills that she'd obtained in her days as a print journalist. She loved researching. She loved finding out about people, and she loved learning. This was something that she'd started all the way back when she was 16, and it was even reported that she had a fantastic memory that helped her with those skills. Among the people that she would interview would be Fiorello LaGuardia, the mayor of New York, Zora Neale Hurston, the author, as well as Eleanor Roosevelt. Those last two were important for various reasons. She would have talked to Eleanor Roosevelt during World War II as sort of an effort to bring awareness to different issues, but in a more casual way, as she was so well liked. But Zora Neale Hurston would be one of the examples that her research would absolutely have come into play. With any author or person of interest that had a book out, she would read the book the night before the interview so that she would have all of those notes to come into the interview with. So she would come in with all of this knowledge and experience, making her the incredible interviewer that she was. Another reason that she would have been a standout interviewer was she wouldn't announce who she was interviewing before she would go on the air. This was something that was mentioned in Ben Gross's memoir as well, that she wouldn't introduce someone before she was interviewing them. And a part of that was because she was very progressive for her time period, and because they were radio interviews, you wouldn't see who she was interviewing. So if she was interviewing a person of color, her audience wouldn't know that in advance. She would sign off of the radio for the last time, right around her 20th anniversary on the air, and very shortly after her manager, Stella Carnes' death. In terms of the jobs that she held in broadcast, Mary Margaret McBride didn't necessarily start there, but she certainly stepped up to the plate when she got her job at WOR. After that, she would go on to broadcast with CBS and NBC with her interviewing segments, with times ranging from 15-minute segments all the way up to 45 minutes. You can start to see the impact that Mary Margaret McBride had on broadcast even while she was still broadcasting. According to the LA Times, on her 10th anniversary, her audience, her fans, had a party in Madison Square Garden. They did a similar thing on her 15th anniversary, but this time at Yankee Stadium. Then, through her interviewing style, she would revolutionize the idea of reporting for radio, bringing human interest stories to the air, which wouldn't have been as common when she'd first started, but after 20 years of doing so, would have been a massive influence in that field as well. In 1960, she released an autobiography called Out of the Air. Another biography has also been written about her, and this was the subject of the NPR piece that I referenced earlier in this episode. This biography is called It's 1 o'clock, and This is Mary Margaret McBride by Susan Ware. Mary Margaret McBride would go on to pass away on April 7th, 1976. However, she was given a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame for all of her work in radio. Over the next couple of weeks, here on the Feminist Frequencies, we're going to be talking about one station and one woman who were somewhat intertwined with each other. Tune in next week to hear about the history of WHER, a station in Memphis, Tennessee, in 1955. Signing off, this is Maggie Berner with Feminist Frequencies.